Hey, what's up, everybody? This is The Drop. Welcome back. This is RJ, your host. We are happy to have you back again. We are going to bring you an interview with the band Goose. The whole band joined us. It was a lot of fun. Saw them last week at the 930 Club in DC, and that was the first time I've seen them live. I feel like often I see bands live before I hear their music at, you know, festivals or shows where they're openers. And in this case, I had been listening to Goose a bunch, and going into it, expectations were super high. And I have to say they lived up to my expectations and beyond. And Matt, who is a slightly more critical listener of music than I am, I would say. That might be putting it lightly, but he came out of this show thinking that Goose was amazing. So that was pretty cool. I think people feel the same way, you know, across the country. Of course, they've been selling out shows. They've been, you know, going into bigger venues, adding dates, all that sort of stuff. So really cool. You can see their dates at goosetheband.com/tour. This week, when this comes out, if you're in Pennsylvania, Columbus, Buffalo, you can see them in the next few days, although a couple of those shows might be sold out by now. They'll be in Colorado for several days. Our Denver folks, go out and see them. They'll be in Denver, Steamboat Springs, and around Colorado. And then they're going to be hitting a ton of other places throughout the Northeast and throughout the Midwest. So anyway, I'm going to take you to that interview in a minute. We talk about their songwriting. We even got into the question of their use of auto-tune in their lyrics, which I find pretty fascinating. But we had a really good conversation. And, you know, they're really smart, really good, talented musicians. And I don't know, I had a lot of fun talking to them. So we're going to get to it in a second. I want to tell you, what, by the time you hear this, tomorrow, Thursday, November 14th, the first episode of After Midnight will be released. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to subscribe to After Midnight. I'm going to put a Spotify link, an Apple Podcast link, and the show page. Use one of those. Make sure you subscribe. You don't want to miss it. I've been listening to Drafts, and our whole team has been working so hard on it, and we're just really proud of it and can't wait for you to hear it. One other thing, Jam just happening. December 6th, Friday, in New York City at New Blue. Scott Metzger, Aaron Magner, Jay White, Adam Chase. This is the first incarnation of a rotating cast of musicians. Scott Metzger will be the host each month, and so this is his first band he's putting together for Jam Just Happened. And I really hope to see a bunch of you there. There are tickets on sale now. Put a link to that in the show notes. But if you're not going to Charleston for Fish, come hang out with us. Come say hi at New Blue. You know, even if you're not that far from New York, come into New York. Come hang with us. All right, we're going to get into this interview with Goose. We appreciate you all listening. Next week, I'm going to be back with an interview with Fruition, who put out a new album this week. So, yeah, keep it going. Keep the feedback coming. Thank you all for listening and for your support. And let us know what we can do better for you. We'll see you all on the flip side. Enjoy. All right, I am here with Goose. What's up, guys?
Hello.
I want to start out by asking you guys just about your growth. You guys just announced new shows in January, which I'm pretty sure sold out in like 10 minutes. And that's pretty cool probably for you guys, but also must be a ton of stuff changing and a lot of like evolution. And I'm just curious how you guys have been handling that, mostly musically. Like, are you just trying to stick to what you're doing, or are there other musical challenges as you keep like selling and, you know, selling things out and playing bigger rooms? And
this is Peter. I would say musical challenges are going to be, you know, just to continue to push the ball forward and be able to come out with a new and exciting show every time. The sellouts are super exciting, and that is like pretty much really unexpected to us. I mean, it's just been a crazy fall in terms of like shows selling out, which just never really happened before. So yeah, we just want to continue to push the ball forward and write new music that people haven't heard, and then, you know, then they'll hear it. It'll be great.
there was this is Rich. There was a mental component, I think, to like to that, or it's, you know, I guess we're in it in real time right now, but just, you know, all this attention coming, yeah, we're not used to, I guess. It's kind of like, do we need, there's the thought of, do we need to be doing something different now, you know? And the answer is, I don't think the answer is no, but there's still that part of you that's kind of like, well, do we just keep doing what we're doing? And yeah, I guess, but you know, yeah, definitely had that moment.
Separate from that, but related, is like, what's the support like for you guys now? Like tour support and merch and all that, has that grown quickly as well? And does that present like a whole different set of challenges in terms of management and people and all that? It seems like Peter will answer that.
Yes. Yeah, we are, you know, we're playing catch up in a lot of ways. We had like our fall tour poster sold out way faster than we thought it would. We need, you know, we're basically assembling a crew at this time and in the next few months. So getting that together and figuring out the financials of all of that is a challenge and something that we're doing in stride.
I was listening to an interview you guys did with Andy Frasco that Rich and Peter did. And first of all, it was awesome. And Andy's a hilarious dude. Can you just give this audience, if they didn't hear that interview, just the quick primer on how the band came together? Because I actually didn't know that, like, the four of you have only been together for like a year and a half or 2 years, right? Yeah. Can you just give people that quick history?
Sure. Ben, Trevor, and myself go back further. Trevor and I started playing when I was in high school. He was going to the Groovy UV at that time, right? I think so. Yeah, something like that.
Yes.
Tight. Yeah, so we met back then. We were introduced by a mutual friend, Sticky Ricky Moranis, aka Peter Castaldi, and he's kind of like a common thread between a lot of us. Actually, he's kind of like the Warren Haynes of the Wilton, Connecticut music scene, if you will.
aka Yoda.
Yeah. Anyway, he introduced us. We started playing together, and you know, had some fun back in the day, and then. Ben and I met at school in Boston, and around that same time, we were putting together a band with another friend of ours, and that's kind of where the three of us started developing our language, if you will. That band was kind of like a bright, burning, fast, extinguishing flame. It lasted like a year and a half, and in that year and a half, we internally did a lot. Externally, we didn't really go anywhere crazy, but... You know, internally we learned a lot, and it was an intense experience, and I think it was definitely the, you know, the it was very formative to where the, you know, what the band is now. And then that fizzled out, kind of took a little time off, and then came back together and started playing shows, and it was a slow roll for a while. Sticky Ricky Moranis was actually the first fourth member of the band. He was a guitar player, and we just got going with him playing bar gigs once a month or something like that. And then went back to school. We kind of just kept playing gigs here and there, and put out the, you know, recorded the record kind of early on of all the songs. Were, you know, we were just still figuring out what we wanted to do and stuff. Went through a few different lineups through the years.
I think we've had like 11 members or something.
Oh, really?
That. Yeah.
Okay, nice. That's a good count. Yeah,
something around there. It's too many.
Yeah, it's been awesome though. We've learned a ton, you know, from all of that. Every step of the way, even if something was kind of like janky, we'd still learn a lot from it. Which is, you know, yeah, it's all you can ask for. But then this guy came along, and it everything kind of just clicked. That's awesome. This guy being Peter. A.K.A. Handini, A.K.A. Wizdini.
The spatula.
Trevor, can you expand on what Rick just said in terms of those formative experiences?
I honestly can't think of anything specific, but it is like a learning process, you know. Throughout the years, you know, it's super tight-knit. Like, you have to really get along with people, and you learn a lot about yourself and how you interact with everyone. And, you know, it's beyond just being, you know, in a business together or something like that. Like, music is super interpersonal and it's got a click.
Rick, is that what you, do you see it more from the interpersonal side, or were there musical things that you learned that you didn't know when you were growing up and learning how to play?
It's kind of all of it. Individual personal growth is a huge part of the whole thing, you know, because every person, if it's like, yeah, you can check your shit at the door as much as you can, but it only works so much. It's not like an office space where it's as simple as you show up, you do your job, and if you don't do it well enough, you get fired. It's so much more than that, you know. It's so much more emotion involved, and I don't know, it's complicated in many ways. So yeah, it's, you know, ton of learning that went through, that, you know, came from all of that. Plus, you know, some bands kind of just fall into the right circumstances, and some it's way more of a, you know, what's the word, like a crusade, just trying to find the right thing, you know.
Yeah. And I think the vast majority of bands are the latter, right? They just, you know, you fight until you either like give up or you eventually break through,
right?
And I'm curious, I know Peter, you have a background in music, the music business. Is that
definitely
has that like helped shape the way you guys have evolved? Because I've been really impressed with just how like your management is great and the rollout has been great, but it seems like you guys were like kind of under the radar a little bit, and then like suddenly kind of came out with like a very well organized and also thoughtful approach to like how you're presenting yourselves and your music to new audiences. Did you bring that kind of sensibility to it, or did that happen more naturally?
I would definitely say in a couple of ways, you know, there was aspects that I brought that helped that along, just in terms of content, and like social media work, mm-hmm. like branding. But you know, that like with the image that took place and what happened is basically based on everybody in the band, you know, our whole vibe and the direction we all basically wanted to go. So it's kind of like, it's kind of evolved naturally in that way. But, yeah, there were, you know, the videos and, a lot of that stuff is something I brought. Yeah.
Cool. It's great. And you guys are, like I mentioned before, obviously on a fast trajectory. Can you guys all name like a formative live music experience? Because your music is so much about the live experience. I assume that maybe each of you have a sort of like memory of a live show that you were like, wow, that'd be cool to do that.
I mean, this is Ben, by the way. In the past couple of years, I mean, I got to go with the most cliche and go with Fish here, because that's been a, you know, relatively new thing for me. And I've seen some shows that have absolutely just blown me away, and it's more than just the notes. It's kind of like the whole experience and the vibe that gets created from all of that. It's like the Baker's Dozen. Those were, you know, my first shows. Awesome. And I went to four of those, and that was
a good place
definitely
to jump
big
on.
For me. Yeah.
So in terms of the crowd and the scene and the interaction and like just the whole scene, not just the music.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Trevor.
Yeah, I would kind of, you know, touch on that as well. You know, the whole thing about kind of community and people connecting. Like, I've been to some smaller, like, electronic music festivals. And, you know, the music is a large aspect, but that really brings everyone together and kind of creates this little mini society, you know, for a weekend or something like that, that I think is really cool. And just being a part of that and being a catalyst for that, I think is awesome.
For me, a big concert experience was Bonnaroo in 2016. It was my first time going to like a festival of that size. I mean, it's one of the biggest. And I was a volunteer, so I was there for like a whole week with my friends, and we jammed in the campgrounds like the night before the festival, and there was like 1,000 people. And it was like one of the first times I had really played to like that many people in just kind of a wild environment. And then like once it got to the music, like it was just an incredible weekend. Every set was so cool and interesting. There was lots of different types of music. It was probably the most inspiring in terms of like, oh, look, I could play all of these different kinds of music and still be at this one place. Mm. Like, that's a really cool thing.
Nice.
So that was really big for me.
Cool.
Yeah, dude, there's so many. This whole time I've been like thinking about so many different like eras of. There's like when I was in high school, on the Fish thing, that I got into them when I was maybe a freshman in high school, and they weren't playing at that time.
Yeah.
And when I was a senior in high school, that's when they came back.
Cool.
So it was kind of like, you know, somehow managed to get tickets to the Hampton shows.
Nice.
And that was, you know, that was crazy. And then obviously we went as many times as we could, us and the homies, whatever, in 2009 and into 2010 a little bit. And Baker's Dozen really kind of rekindled that the magic, because I kind of I fell off from it. I got into a bunch of other stuff. It's always there. I always love it, but it wasn't like, you know, at that point, that was the thing. We were just trying to go to as many shows as we could and stuff. But yeah, I guess in the, you know, the, if I'm thinking about like the past few years, the one show that just like blew my socks off more than anything else, it was Bon Iver at the Cap.
Okay.
That was, it was the 22 million tour. Uh-huh. It was, I think 2017 maybe. I don't know. But yeah.
What about it?
I don't know. I could probably talk about that dude longer than anyone cares to listen to. But he's just, I mean, like the production, he's just pushing the envelope, you know, in terms of sound and ways songs can exist. And it's just kind of like way outside of what's, you know, anything that's I've seen before.
Yeah.
And even, you know, as weird as he'll get, it's kind of like there's still just a tremendous amount of feeling to the whole thing. Mm-hmm. The production was insane. I've never heard that room sound so good. The light show, I don't know, I forget what it was, but there was something that they didn't break out until like halfway through the show. And then they just like hit something and everyone was like, what? Everyone freaked out. It was pretty dope.
Thing when somebody brings in like a new special effect. Like,
oh, yeah.
Halfway through
and you wait until yeah. Yeah, it was very impactful.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that. What can you guys tell us a little bit about the songwriting process? Like, do you work with anyone outside of the band? Do you guys, the four of you, just kind of get together? Is there a primary lyricist that you guys, among the four of you, do you guys just collaborate? Like, how does that work?
As of right now, there's kind of like different categories of songs, I guess. You know, there's songs that I've brought to the table by myself. There's songs that Peter's brought to the table by himself. There's songs that have come from his past band, and there's songs that have come from the past band that I mentioned before that we were in together. And that song, that those songs, I wrote with, primarily wrote with, this guy, Matt Campbell, who we did that band with, and Trevor, wrote a song at that time as well that we currently play. Cool. So it's kind of, it's kind of a different spread.
Is it, as you're growing and becoming a more cohesive unit with this four, is that going
to
change?
I hope to see it evolve a lot, you know, like right now, like Peter said before, we're playing catch up big time. You know, we're playing a lot of songs that haven't been released. So we're trying to do that and also, you know, work on new music and also do all, you know, handle, then it's not, I guess it's a fire of sorts, you know, just what's going on. We're just trying to keep up with it and stay present with it. So yeah, it's, you know, but we definitely hope to, we will evolve that process. I think, you know, I'll continue to write songs alone. Peter will continue to write songs alone, but we'll also, you know, do more writing as a group in the future for sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I want to ask, talk about those releases. I just mentioned that you released three singles. Was that part of a strategy and why did you choose that strategy?
Yeah. There's a bigger picture to the whole thing. It was an idea, and it got that idea actually kind of came together pretty quickly. We kind of just jumped right into it while we were already working on another project. So, you know, the habit of spreading ourselves a little thin. But you know, that project, when it's all said and done, I guess what I will say is it's kind of in my mind it's sort of an ode to what I was just, you know, talking about in terms of these songs that have kind of come from different places, living and like finding, sharing a roof, you know?
Cool.
Yeah.
It's like a hotel.
Peter, can you talk more about the how it's like a hotel?
Well, you know, yeah, we got some songs that I wrote and some songs that Rick wrote and some songs from past bands, and you know, they're all going to be sharing a floor,
sure, in, a floor
the, in the hotel. Yeah, maybe they'll get some room service.
Yeah,
you know,
in the Spotify
head
hotel.
Down to the pool.
Do you guys, I mean, I was wondering about the releasing singles, because it seems like people who are old like me, I listen to albums and it's like, it's pretty weird, or I listen to shows, you know, shows or albums, but I think that's like going away and people are listening to playlists and to singles and moving from band to band. Was that part of the thinking, or is it just that you guys could release these songs as they were ready?
It was definitely part of the thinking, just in terms of like what we've seen from doing one song at a time, is that we've gotten you know, we hadn't put out any music at all for like 3 years since 2016. So yeah. Once we put out a song, we saw like, you know, now there's like all these Spotify algorithms that will put that song in like somebody's new release radar. And then we saw like our monthly listeners go up, and then, you know, they would slowly die down as like a month would go by or something like that. And
yeah.
Put on a new single and go back up.
Mm-hmm.
So we found out that like just doing one song at a time is going to basically, you know, keep our monthly listeners up and,
yeah.
and keep people like, keep the new songs like on their radars and their playlists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also keeping fans engaged with new music, right? Right. The hardcore fans yeah. will be like, cool, a new song, you know?
There's, you know, the obviously logistical factors to it. Like, you know, that factor, as well as just on our end, being able to crank out one song being way more manageable than a whole record
yep.
while we're getting smoked by all this other stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was definitely part of it. But the, you know, another part of it is just like the desire to experiment with the fact that the releasing music now, there's absolutely no rules.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it
mm-hmm.
however. You can release mm-hmm. two songs. You can mm-hmm. it just goes out into this thing
yep.
and, you know, there's no the platform, like
there's no gatekeepers.
Yeah,
right. It's like
nothing.
you can release a video, you
right.
can release a track wherever.
Right. So like what would happen if we just put up singles, mm-hmm. a whole album of singles, mm-hmm. you know? I don't know.
It seems that whatever you guys are doing, yeah. it seems to be working, so that's good. I want to ask a question about jamming, because, you know, we're in the jam band world. As you probably all know, like Fish in their early days, they had a whole approach to practicing jamming with the Hay exercises and things that you guys have probably read about or heard about. But do you guys have an approach to practicing improv?
Usually this is Ben, there's a long stern look at me and some hand motions, and I'm repeatedly told reggae, and that's kind of my cue to keep it, you know, keep tempos back, don't get excited and rush, and maybe like chill out a little bit or like at all, and yeah, just trying to be patient is,
cool.
is a big thing. It's like, imagine like you're on a beach in Jamaica with a red stripe and a joint, and like that attitude in the jam.
I like that.
Yeah.
So is that something you guys practice, or does this stuff just happen in the live experience?
It's usually, I mean, we practice, and we've been jamming a lot and trying to work in patience, and like we put out a couple clips of our jams from rehearsal,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, we definitely practice that, but it's also a thing that like you get into the live energy and like everything just feels way slower, like tempo is like your perspective is totally changed, and you kind of have to remind yourself like relax, because yeah. you know, when we're, you know, at Trevor's house, it's just us and it's easy to be relaxed, and
mm-hmm.
then you can practice as much as you want to practice, and then you get out on stage in front of a packed crowd of people and the energy is totally different.
Yeah.
So you kind of need to remind yourself that that's a thing you need to prepare for.
Yeah, just in terms of the difference of like energy and stuff like that and being relaxed, like I feel like it's kind of like a chart going like this, where, you know, the bigger crowds we play in front of, or there's more hype behind a show, we can kind of like work ourselves up. And then, you know, sometimes it's not as loose as we'd like it to be. But then like everything after that, we kind of are more relaxed from there on out. So we're just kind of pushing the threshold every time. And, you know, like you said, being relaxed is a huge thing, you know, not having to feel like you have to force an idea or force something out, but just let it kind of come to you. And, yeah. and that's where I think the good results come from.
In terms of developing the language, we'd always talked about like the various exercises and things you can do to, you know, improve your improvisation as a group, you know. Never actually employed them, never actually did it. But I definitely have spent, you know, especially back in the day, I'd get and be like all stoned and just like write a bunch of ideas of different like ways we could practice our jamming,
uh-huh.
you know. And we really never did that. It's all kind of been a natural development. There's a lot of things that could kind of point to that we've maybe talked about and, you know, talked about working on and stuff like that. I think
we listened to the Dawn of MIDI album, and it's a really cool album because parts develop really slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried in practice to just, you know, stay on one thing for a long time, and then after like a while, just add like another note or
mm-hmm.
change, vary it slightly. And that teaches you just to be more patient with your ideas and develop like more naturally and listen to other people.
It's interesting because it kind of, what you guys are saying sort of reminds me of like meditation, in that you do it, or at least for me, I do it, and then when I actually need it to work, often it doesn't. But I think it actually slowly seeps in over time, and like the way you interact or whatever. It sounds like a similar thing. Like thinking about it and even considering it probably does affect the actual implementation of it.
Yeah.
Which seems cool, but that's like several steps removed from just being like, yes, let's practice this jam and then we'll jam like that.
Right. Right.
Which I guess is maybe just, it sounds like that's working.
The one like more specific thing that does come to mind is the tension and release thing. Cause I remember in the Vissuto days, like, Vissuto was that other band. Mm-hmm. We were like, we were really interested in it, and we were working on it, and like we hit it sometimes. When we did, we get really stoked, but it wasn't like we were fighting for it that whole time. Mm-hmm. And then we stopped playing together for like a year or two, came back, and it was like there all of a sudden. And mm-hmm. obviously we've gotten better at it, but you know, just the language that's developed from that is something that, you know, I find exciting personally. It's, you know, one of the things that, you know, when I just like, I know Trev's going to hold it out, you mm-hmm. know, we're approaching a one, and I know he's going to keep pushing mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's that's like the best moment of the show.
And Peter,
it's like, you never know. If it's like
Peter assimilated really quick. He picked it up really quickly. Cause I remember when you joined the band, we were like, yeah, so we kind of like, we've been working on this thing for like a long time, and you're like, all right, yeah. And you're like, within, I don't know, I feel like within a month, you just, you like got it. But yeah, it's just like those Jedi moments we all get stoked about, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome. And I hear them in the shows, like even as I'd listen to 2018 recordings and 2019, they sound different to me. Like it sounds more developed. I have to ask you guys a question about the lyrics, because I think you guys have vocal, a lot of vocal talent. The use of like the effects on the vocals, which I would consider like auto-tune. I don't know if that's the technical term. I wanted to ask you guys about the use of that and what kind of role that plays for you guys.
Yeah, it's a sound that I've heard other artists that I, you know, get off on mm-hmm. use, and I experimented with it, and I resonated with it. Mm-hmm. I like it. I like the sound. You know, there's kind of this, it's kind of like a ironic thing almost. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's designed to create perfection, but there's so much like imperfection in it. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but whatever. Have
pretty big misconnotation about it, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, one thing is like, there's ways to use that technology to tune your vocals without making it obvious, mm-hmm. right? In mm-hmm. a live setting. So the, you know, using that effect, it's an effect. It's, mm-hmm. you can tell that it's doing that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, if you're trying to hide it, then it would be a totally different thing. But yeah, I don't know, something about the sonic of the sound of it, it just, you know, inspires me.
I feel like it's like bringing the next sort of generation of music into jam music almost. And I don't know, that maybe that's like reading too much into it or too philosophical or whatever, but like, this is what people of the next generation like have listened to growing up, and that's influenced music differently.
I agree 100%. I think, you know, the coolest thing about any band is where they're drawing their influence from and how they're replicating it in a new original way. And for a lot of us, it's music that came out in the 2000s, 2010s,
mm-hmm.
90s, like, you know, and when autotune first came out, like, you know, it was like a big thing, you know.
Yep.
That's something that we can really resonate with just because of our generation. So absolutely.
So I did ask people from Twitter for questions for you guys. One quick thing is just the role that covers play in your sets, because I think, to me, like, I hear covers are usually like a stopping point between one thing and another, but you guys take covers even of that other bands have covered and like stretch them out and in totally different ways. Do you feel like it's a place where you guys can like get comfortable in the middle of a set, or are they just sort of part of your overall repertoire?
And they feel pretty much just like part of the repertoire. It's not like we get to a cover and it's like, oh, there's our time to relax and like, you know, get ready for our next original that we care more about. I feel like we treat all the covers like they're our own and try to make them our own. And we we definitely play them like us playing them. We don't try to sound like whatever band we're covering for the most part.
It's, I think the use of covers has been, I think it's really good. And there's been like some surprising covers that I think are just really cool to hear a band like you guys play. If you listen to some of your shows on Nugs.net, which people should, you hear at a lot of your shows, people are yelling at you guys to take your shirts off. Is that like, is that normal? Is that
if Trevor would just take his shirt off already, they would probably stop yelling.
You guys have obviously noticed this phenomenon. Like, I thought maybe it was like an inside joke that I didn't understand, or maybe it's just like summer festival shows that I was listening to. But
we've got some older fans, guys that grew up, some hometown buddies, mostly of everyone in my band except for me. That these guys they're a rowdy crew. They like to drink and have a good time. And sometimes when they would do that in the past, they would, you know, crave a little something extra.
From Trevor.
And, you know, he would give it to them back in the day. And now he's been holding out. And so...
It's caught on.
It's become a thing. You know, there's fights about people yelling in the soundboards. All this stuff. It's pretty funny. And I think that one day we might just see a shirt with a Trevor again.
I think it's worth doing just so it doesn't infringe on the soundboard recording, you know? Like,
oh yeah, it happened this year. We played in St. Louis for Valentine's Day, and Trevor came out on like a balcony with no shirt on, with a white bass, and we played a Teddy Pendergrass song. Love awesome. TKO. And it was one of the sexiest things I've ever been a part of.
I do want to let you guys get to soundcheck in a second. Are you looking forward to festivals next summer? Should we look out for more festivals next year like you did in 2019, and anything else that you guys are potentially doing this next summer that you can share?
Look out.
I think someone specifically asked if you're going to be playing the Birds of a Feather Festival again.
I loved that festival.
Seemed like a lot of people liked it, and you guys had fun playing there.
Yeah.
It was very relaxing.
It was super. The sets, we didn't do a set list for those sets, and it was like one of the most relaxed playing environments we've had all year.
That's really cool.
It was great.
Cool. Well, this has been really fun, guys, and thank you all for taking the time, and we'll see you guys tonight at the 9:30 Club, and obviously people can go see you guys soon somewhere near them because you guys are all over the place. So I hope you guys have fun out on the road. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right, we really hope you enjoyed that interview with Goose. We will be following them closely and hopefully talking to them again soon. I'm going to leave you with a track from Goose here. If you haven't seen them, go out and see them. We'll see you all next week. The Drop is brought to you by Cash or Trade, and Osiris works in partnership with Jambase. Get out there and see some live music, folks. Said goodbye, you cried.
I walked out, you stayed inside. And as I drink my green tea, I wonder if you are right for me. How can it be? It was time to flee the elevator. The elevator. I'm not a waiter. So see you later. Alligator. Alligator.